a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to First Lady and Friends. We're super excited today. It's been a while. I was sick last week. Apologize for that. We pushed a few of these back, and we're really excited today to get going again. Our guest today is somebody that I just met not too long ago, so obviously we're best friends now.
Exactly.
her name is Sherry Cutler. Sherry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
So happy you would come. Now, Sherry, your husband just got elected to the House of Representatives mm-hmm. here in Utah. I have for a long time wanted to have a show with spouses because it's a unique thing in politics to be the spouse of an elected official. And I don't think we often get that perspective. And so it's been something that I've looked forward to for a long time. So happy you're here. But let's start with you and your story. Tell me about yourself. Tell me about where you grew up. Tell me about your family. Let's go in that way back machine and talk about all that.
Okay, great. Oh my gosh, there's so much.
good. That's what we think. Like.
Yeah, we're going to try and swing this back onto somebody else. But so I grew up in Utah. I grew up in Davis County, mainly. I'm the oldest of five children. I grew up in Bountiful, Utah, and had a great childhood. I have great siblings. I went to Bountiful High School. Played a little basketball. I know, right?
Yes. Love it.
And then went to BYU and got a degree in business education with an emphasis in marketing.
Wow.
And then taught high school for a couple of years up at Northridge High. Mm. And that was an interesting experience because I was 4 years older than my seniors, right?
Wow, yeah.
You don't think about this, right?
You do not think about this.
Yeah. So, but I felt so much older than them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which was interesting because a couple of them asked me out.
So oh, dear. Oh, wow.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because now, you know, some of my best friends in my life are like that age.
Right.
Like just like 4 years younger than me. Anyway, I loved that experience. Loved teaching high school. In between there, between graduation and teaching high school, that's where I met Paul.
Okay.
We were set up on a blind date by his sister-in-law and my mom. I'll do a quick little...
So basically an arranged marriage.
Yes, it was an arranged marriage. Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's kind of a cool story, though, because... So Paul's the youngest of 10. And... His older brother and his family moved into our ward when I was like, I want to say 12. Mm-hmm. And she was like my young woman's advisor. But I never knew that this younger brother even existed, which is probably good, really.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So one day she and my mom were talking and they put two and two together that Paul had served in my mom's brother's mission in Korea.
Okay.
So my uncle's mission. So they decided we should be set up. So that's how that happened. And it was very quick and very apparent that we were going to get married. So in between there, we got engaged and I taught the first half of the year engaged. And then we got married in November. So taught at Northridge for a couple of years, and then I had my first child, Rebecca, and then quit to stay home and raise my kids. I have Rebecca, who's now 27. Sorry, honey, if that's wrong.
How old are you?
I always have to remember the year. She's turning 27. That's what it is. Okay. And she is married to an amazing guy named Kyle, and they live in Lubbock right now. Mm-hmm. He's finishing up law school, and they have my one grandbaby, who is adorable. She was born on my birthday.
A birthday buddy.
I know. Not even induced. Like, just happened. So it was meant to be. We are BFFs. Of course. And then I have another daughter who is 24, and she just got married a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago. They're both down at BYU. He's an amazing guy, too. Thrilled with that. And then I have a son who's 21 and just returned home from a mission last July. And he's now at BYU as well, hanging out with his siblings. And then I had a little baby. His name is Ashton. He had trisomy 13, and he lived for about half an hour. Have a little angel guy there that's like very involved in the family still.
Yes.
And we miss him. But so then I have Taylor, who is in seventh grade, 13. But because of our baby that we lost in there, there's this big gap. So it's been interesting for him. It's like being an only child.
Wow.
Okay. That was a lot.
That was fantastic. It was perfect. Exactly what we wanted to hear. I love that. And I love that, I love that, you know, this having that special child that you have and is still part of you and is just beautiful. We've been, we work a lot with our Special Olympians and it's dear to my heart. So I know that, you know, as parents, we all go through different things and
absolutely.
Our families help shape us who we are, and that's really fun. And having a younger one all by themselves is we're experiencing that right
yes,
now.
You
not,
are.
Probably not quite the gap, 4 years, but all 4 years of high school, we're hanging out with her, and she's about done with us. So
I think Taylor feels the same, and he's got a ways to go with us still.
He'll get used to it.
Okay, let's hope.
So fun. Well, so tell me a little bit about your journey to go into education.
Okay.
Yeah, just talk a little bit about, you know, what that decision was like.
Okay. First of all, let me just say, I was just so shy growing up. Like,
really?
Yeah. I'm actually an introvert. You would never guess.
No, I would not. I know. And everything is so different. Introverts, extroverts. There's so many variables, I feel
like. Oh, yeah. Oh, totally.
I'm different in different situations,
totally.
I feel like.
Yes.
In some
oh, totally.
Ways, too.
Me too. Yeah. So, 100%. Yeah. So anyway, I never really thought about it. And then when I hit high school, I had some amazing teachers, but one in particular that I'm thinking of was my calculus teacher and my physics teacher. His name was Doc Harvey. Hey, Doc. I think he's still kicking out there somewhere. He was awesome. He was such a good teacher. And I was just kind of drawn to, like, we need better teachers, right? Yeah. We need really good teachers. And then I think I came by it, honestly, my grandmother was a teacher and my grandfather was a teacher. And then my mother, she taught, it's now Salt Lake Community College, but it was Trade Tech back when she was teaching there. She taught English. So I think it was already in my blood a little bit. Yeah. But I had to overcome this talking in front of people.
Yeah. Thing,
right.
Yeah. And especially high schoolers. It's terrifying.
I know. Isn't that so funny that I picked high school?
Yeah.
But I love that age. I love that age group so much. So anyway, that's kind of what led me to it. And I love it so much.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I had a high school teacher English teacher that would say he was a PhD. And so, I mean, like, he's one of the smartest people, mm-hmm. so talented mm-hmm. That I knew. And he was teaching high school in a little rural high school.
Yeah.
Just because he loved it. Yeah. And it was so great. And he said, I remember one time people would always ask him, why are you teaching? You could be at any university. Yeah. You could be doing anything you wanted. Yeah. He was at this little rural high school. And he said, I just really like high schoolers. They're almost like real people, which I thought was really good.
Yeah.
They're a little, half-baked.
Yes, exactly.
So I always love that. Well, I want to get into talking a little bit more about some of the stuff we've been up to together.
Okay.
So we'll do that when we come right back.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back here with Sherry Cutler. She is a new spouse to a new... You're not a new spouse. You're a
not
new...
Not a new spouse,
You're
yeah.
a spouse of a new legislator, let's put it that way. And first of all, let's talk about that part.
Let's do it.
What... I mean, I think my long history of a political spouse is well documented. I've been in your shoes, and so I know that's why we connect, at least one of the ways we connect.
For sure.
But talk about what that decision was like to run. Talk about, maybe what led up to that. And then talk about how it's been so far. This is your first session. Mm-hmm. We're almost to the end. Tomorrow's the last day of the session. Yes.
We got this.
It's time for everyone to go home and relax and calm down. So talk a little bit about, your journey there.
Okay. So first I'll go back to Paul's mother. So Paul, when Paul was 5 years old or six, his dad passed away. So he was raised primarily by his mom.
10 kids.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of them were older than him. Like, he has nieces and nephews older than him. It's a whole thing.
I understand.
We can totally go
there. I come from a family of 10.
So there you go. Yeah. So yeah. You get it. You totally get it.
Yeah.
But his mom, one of the things that she instilled in him was this concept of being active in the community. Mm. She wasn't necessarily like there in person, but if she had an opinion or an idea that she wanted to share, she would write letters to the editor. She would write to her legislators and just try to stay active that way and kind of instilled this, like, if you have a problem with something, then maybe we get involved so that we can find a solution, kind of
wow.
a thing, right?
Novel idea.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
Instead of just yelling.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Out into the void or out into social media.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
We both have stories.
Yes.
Anyway, so he, when we came back to Utah, we lived in Texas for a while and we came back to Utah. He finished his executive MBA and then he decided he wanted to run for city council. Like, he always wanted to, kind of like his mom instilled in him, have a voice and feel like he was making a difference in his community, right?
Yep.
So he ran and won and did that for 8 years and then took a little break and then was asked to run for mayor. And so we did that for 4 and he was going to run again and filed and then we prayed about it, did not feel good about running for a second term. So then he took another little break and then decided to run for legislature. And that one was actually, he kind of always wanted to do something at the state level after having such a great experience at the more local level, right?
Yep.
And with that experience, having been, you know, the local level and being able to transfer that and understand where the local people are coming from and then take that up to the state level. So that was, that's kind of, you know, he'd probably be able to tell you more, but.
No, that's, and I'm sure that decision together, I mean, I'm sure.
Yes,
I mean,
for sure.
Involves the whole family. Yeah. It involves a lot of.
Absolutely.
You know, you have to prep for a lot of, you know, I think it's, there's probably always been this, some element of sort of the negative vitriolic rhetoric that, you know, goes on in the public sphere. But I don't know, maybe it's just because we're in it right now. It just feels a lot more and there's more avenues, I think, you know, as far as social media goes to really be negative and also positive too. I mean, I don't know if this is your experience. I remember when Spencer was first in the legislature, I remember so many people, I don't know how you know, your husband can be up there with all those, you know, terrible people. And I just took every opportunity I could to say, actually, our experience has been very different. Our experience has been that these are some really incredible people.
Yeah.
You may not agree with them or they agree with certain positions on certain bills or whatever, but the vast majority of them are in good faith working on something they believe in.
Yes, 100%. Oh my gosh, yes.
How has it been as far as, have you gotten those kinds of comments or have you gotten, you know, negative? Have you seen some negative stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there always is, right?
Right. And you've been in the local government, which again, like, even... I would say, you know, see if you agree, even worse in a lot of aspects on that front, because when you're the mayor or the city councilman or something like that, it's so personal to people that the issues that they're dealing with. I mean, like, it's the cemetery or it's the, I mean, people get real worked up about the cemetery.
I'm telling you, we had a cemetery thing going on in Centerville too. It's a thing.
It's a thing,
Abby.
Not just in Fairview.
No.
The weeds, the, you know, like.
We had the deer. We had a deer thing going on.
Yes.
Eating people's tomatoes.
Yes.
Stuff. Right?
It's important. And I always thought, you know, like, I always have this moment where I'm like, I wish that's the most upsetting thing that.
Yeah.
That in my life.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And
that my tomatoes were being eaten by deer. Like,
that
would be.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. If I could get that upset about something like that, wow, life must be pretty good.
Exactly. I had this one experience that this totally goes to what you're talking about. I'm not going to say like the exact specific situation that was going on because I don't want to throw anyone under the bus, but there was, it gets hard sometimes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I might even get emotional. Anyway, stuff was going on and there are lies, you know, people say things that aren't true and all of that. So super fun. And I remember having this moment shortly thereafter, after coming through the other side, and the current president of our country, his wife and his wife and daughters were under attack, and I did not vote for this president, but I have such compassion for these families.
Yep.
Like, do you recognize this is these girls' daddy that we're talking about, or the girls themselves? And I just want people to remember that. For the most part, people are just humans.
Yes.
Well, all of them are humans,
yes,
but they're just humans, and they're all trying to do what they think is right. There are outliers for sure, but remember that they have families and the humanity of it.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad you brought that up. And that, I mean, I feel the same way. I mean, I've met, you know, Democrat presidents. Yes. I've met Republican presidents. I've met, you know, Democrats in the legislature, Republicans. I'm telling you, like, all across the board, that's why, you know, for Spencer and I, it's been like, I don't love the label of party, because to me, again, it is exactly like you said, it's humans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether we disagree or, you know, whether we agree or whether we violently agree.
yes. There's that.
Or violently disagree. We do have to remember that, and that's why I love to do this podcast. And I'm so glad you brought that up. And it's why I wanted to have you on here, because I want people to understand, you know, this point of view.
Yeah.
That regardless of whether you agree or disagree with somebody, they do have families.
Yeah.
And they do have dearly held beliefs.
Yes. Yes.
And also that some of the things you hear, you know, before you lose your mind.
Yes.
Ask,
oh my goodness. Yes.
Ask what the real story is, because for the most part, it's usually not what you heard.
Right. Even if you hear it from a beloved church member.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
It may not be true still.
It may not
And not
be
to
true.
Throw them under the bus either. Like, we don't, sometimes we don't know where the source is. That's, and so go to the source and just ask.
And also, for me, you know, we come from a really small town, and when I, you know, during our campaign and since, you see somebody that says something really terrible about you, that you know, and maybe we've known him our whole lives, and all of a sudden I'm like, wait, but you know him, like, you know his heart. And yet you're going to believe some stranger on Facebook rather than the person that you know and love. Yeah.
Why are we not going, no way?
Yeah.
No way would this be him, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Or there must be a reason why he voted this way or why he supported this. There must be something.
Something,
you know,
to
and
it.
I think that's a good lesson for all of us in everything that we do, because I mean, I work so much with kids in schools, and again, you as a former educator, kids are watching, and they're watching our interactions with each other. And what I see is devastating. If I'm seeing all this stuff, they're seeing it too.
Oh, for sure.
And they're watching terrible behavior being modeled, and that's destructive.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to get into some really fun stuff that we've been doing together, and we'll do that when we come right back. We're back here with Sherry Cutler. Her husband, Paul, is a new legislator, and we've been talking all things political spouses. And one thing that we've been doing the last several years is doing a service project with all of the legislative spouses. And it's seriously one of my favorite events that we do year. And I think partly is because that across the aisle type feel and actual, you know, logistically, it's people from both sides of the aisle. I know it's always tricky to get a lot of our male spouses there, but I love when they come.
Yes.
I love, so you know, having a diverse group there together. It's really fun. I'm going to have you tell a little bit about what we did this year, because it was super fun.
Oh my goodness. It was so fun. So we put together like family, what would you call them? Family night
like,
kits?
Yeah, connection kits.
Yeah, connection kits where our cute foster families would have a kit where they could play games and have some snacks and just connect with each other and have some time. You know, there's a lot that goes into managing a family and running a family, especially when we have a situation like foster care. It's not always easy. Yeah. It's very beautiful, but not always easy. And to be able to have some activities for them to do where they can just have fun.
Yeah.
So we put those together, and then we put together some Valentines and little bears. And you'll have to remind me which went to who, because I can't remember.
Yeah, so it's fun because, you know, the organizations that I work with are Utah Foster Care and Raise the Future are two of the organizations that we work with in the the foster care space or the child welfare space. Mm-hmm. So the Utah Foster Care is the one that we put together the kits for.
Okay.
They're a great organization where they recruit and retain, you know, help retention and training of our foster families. Okay. And so those are where the connection kits went to, the family connection kits. And then the Valentines, Raise the Future works with our population of kids who are waiting for families. And it's such a heartbreaking situation where there's kids who have been in several different placements and they don't have permanency.
Yeah.
So their parents' parental rights have been terminated and they don't have a home. They don't have a permanent place to be.
Yeah.
So they end up in sort of these group home situations and they have a lot of distrust for the system, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
So we did some Valentine's kits or Valentine's for little bags for each of those kids. In that population. So yeah. It was super fun.
It was so fun. And then we got to have lunch, which was fun. But I was so touched by the panel that we got to listen to.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Oh, my goodness. So we had two ladies who were current foster moms.
Yep.
Right? Correct me if I
get
this
wrong. No, that's
okay.
Right.
And then we had one adorable human. I can't remember her name. Who was in the foster system and aged out,
yes,
as I recall.
Mm-hmm.
And she now works for foster care,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yep.
And I don't remember. We had the mediator guy. What was his name? Do you remember?
No.
I remember his name. Okay. It's all good. Anyway, he asked them questions about their experiences and what it was like for our one adorable person growing up in foster care and now her turning around and working in that space. And I just, these people are angels.
Yeah.
On
a lot
earth.
A lot of tears.
Yes, lots of tears. I had lots of tears.
Yeah,
because it is, you know, it's one of those places, like I was just saying, it's beautiful and painful and amazing and all of those things. And there are very few situations like that.
Yeah.
And the depth of feeling and the depth of love that people can, it's carved out of them.
Yeah.
If that makes sense,
yeah,
right? That ability to feel that deeply towards someone. Anyway, I was touched. I loved it. It was awesome.
And you know, it's interesting because I get so many people say to me, and I think there were a lot in that room kind of saying this to themselves, like, I don't think I could ever do that. I don't think I could ever, you know, bring somebody in my home knowing that either they're going to be reunited or, you know, that I might not keep them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those of us who are parents, who are mothers, who know the depth of feeling as it relates to motherhood, and parenthood, I think... You know, and I've documented this on this podcast, but you know, as a gestational carrier, as a surrogate, mm-hmm, there's this interesting moment when you're trying to sort of thwart the most powerful bond in nature.
Yeah.
And knowing that this child is not yours,
yeah,
but still trying to have the trying to be the person that child needs in that moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where I think I relate to foster mothers in that, I mean, it's a very different type of situation, but.
Yeah, but same.
Yeah.
I mean, different, but same.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I think those feelings of us, and I think we're afraid of those feelings sometimes of being hurt. And so we shy away from, hey, I don't want to get involved in that. That feels like it's too painful. It's too hard.
Mm-hmm.
But I shared this experience that day about my friend who got a foster child, a baby, an infant, and, you know, lots of infertility. And this was a great moment.
Yeah.
And not knowing, is she keeping him? Is she not? Is, you know, is this baby going back? What, you know, you just don't know.
Yeah.
And I remember her just going through this turmoil. And then one day I was talking to her a few weeks in and she said, you know what? She's like, I finally came to this really peaceful moment where I could say, it doesn't matter whether this child is leaving or staying because what this child needs right now is all the love I can give him. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, whether it's a long moment or a short moment, this child needs me to be his hero, his protector, his love, and give him everything I possibly can. So that's what I think was beautiful as we heard those stories, right?
Yeah, and I feel, as you talk about that, like the situation with the baby that I lost, we found out early on, you know, that he wasn't going to live, but we didn't know when. So we're carrying a baby and, you know, the idea that I could lose him at any time during the pregnancy. And having those same feelings, like, it's like, all right, well, right now, we're going to connect.
Wow.
Right?
Yes.
And similar to being a surrogate. Like, okay, this is where we are right now. We're going to connect. We're going to give all the love. We're going to spend all the time we can rather than worrying about future.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And just do the best we can to connect.
Yeah.
The other thing that I loved that you talked about at that event was the concept of there are so many ways to help, right?
Yeah.
Like maybe the fit is not that you become a foster parent, but maybe the fit is that you support your support system. And interestingly, you know, many of us go to church around here and we have similar things set up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so it seems like a natural thing where maybe you take the kids for a night. Maybe you bring in a meal. Maybe you recognize that they're going through something hard and send them a note.
Yep.
You know, everybody can get involved in some way.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And that's through our work with our in this foster care space. That's this idea of care communities.
Yes. Yeah.
Being a part of somebody's care community that's doing this work. Mm-hmm. We can all do something.
Yeah.
And I think that's really a big part of what our work is. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit before we end here. Talk a little bit about maybe the experiences that you've had with other spouses in the legislature. I mean, we've had this, but talk a little bit about. I think people don't realize it is kind of a fraternity or a sorority,
and
it feels like it's an interesting place to be.
Yeah, it's like you have an instant family, which is fun, and it's one of those tricky ones where it's like, here are 74 people for you.
That's right. Good luck.
Good luck.
Have all their names. Yeah.
I remember teaching high school and I couldn't remember, like, it took me forever to remember my students' names. But it's awesome because you show up and there are always people that, you know, come sit by me or whatever, right? Because when you're a newbie, it's that state where you're like,
it's funny to watch because it really is. And we've all been there. We've all been there in kindergarten.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
Yes.
If we moved, we all went to middle school.
Yes.
We all went to high school. And that's scary. And if the funny thing is, it feels a lot like
it's
that.
It's the same.
It is. You don't ever grow out of this.
No.
And when you're in the legislature, it is. It's like, I'm a freshman. Do I have friends?
Yes.
Who's my lunch buddy?
Right. Someone going to stick me in a locker.
Yes. And by the end.
Oh, it's so great.
By the end of the session, even that first session, I mean, you have to understand, like, the last night of the session, and you'll get this tomorrow night, it's a blast.
Yeah.
Because
there's fun.
The pressure's let out of the room.
Mm-hmm.
The pressure's off.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's come together. We've all fought over all the different
bills. All the things.
And this is what people don't understand in the general public is that even though we're vehemently disagreeing on a lot of issues, when it comes to that last night, people are genuine friends.
Yes.
They
That's
really
what
are.
I
even
love
though
about
I've
it.
I've disagreed with you on this issue. Mm-hmm. We are still friends.
Yes. Yes.
And that's what the public doesn't see, which I wish they could see
more. I wish they did too. Yeah. They kind of take what they see maybe nationally. And we don't really know. People need to know. They don't really know. But sometimes we kind of take what we hear in the news nationally and we assume that everyone hates each other. And it's not that way, at least not here.
It isn't in my experience. It really isn't. Yeah. In fact, I was talking to the Senate president a few weeks ago, and he was going on and on and on about this new Democrat legislator mm-hmm. that he just thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, that's what people need to yes. see. I wish yes. that everybody had a little glimpse into yeah. what you and I have seen, which yeah. is that, you know, it's the sausage making. It is. It's really hard and it's mm-hmm. really messy. Mm-hmm. And that's the process.
Yeah, it is.
But in the end, we really all are trying to do what we believe is right. Yes. And we really are friends at yeah. the end of the day.
Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Well said. Well said.
Thank you, so Sherry. Good. This has been a delight for me. And again, these are making friendships like this
yeah.
makes everything worth it for everything we do in politics. And so I appreciate you coming on and speaking about this with me
Thank
today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been so fun.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.